Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and video show that brings you leadership lessons and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. I'm your host, Lisa Lipkin, and if you're new to the channel, please subscribe and hit the bell icon below. Well, I want to start this interview with a story. At least 20 years ago, about 21 years ago, my telephone rang. I was living in a small studio apartment in New York City with garbage trucks and noise and dreaming of leaving. And all of a sudden, a Dutch theater producer says to me, "I want to bring you and your new one-woman show to the Netherlands." I had been working on a performance about being the child of a Holocaust survivor. And I was so thrilled to get out of New York and to share it in Europe. But then she made the pot even sweeter. Just before hanging up, this producer said to me, "Oh, and by the way, you may have heard of me. My name is Xaviera Hollander, the happy hooker. I'm now the happy booker booking theater in Amsterdam." And I went crazy because of course I knew who Xaviera Hollander was. Anybody who grew up in the 60s as I did knew that she was a fascinating woman who had written a best-selling book called The Happy Hooker, published in 1971. About both the joys of sex, her life as a prostitute, and eventually as one of the most successful madams in all of New York City. The book went on to sell 14 million copies. She became an international bestseller. It spawned countless projects, including a movie in which Lynn Redgrave played her. In addition, Xaviera was offered a column with Penthouse, which she wrote for 35 years, called Call Me Madam. A whole slew of other books, all sorts of fascinating things. And I am so excited to have her as my guest today. And I can't wait to start our chat. So welcome, welcome, Xaviera. So nice to see you.
Nice to hear you and see you again. It's been years, yeah.
Now, I will tell you, I'm looking at you in the very home that used to be the theater that you ran, that I first came to perform in. And I have to tell you, my first impression of you was that you were the Gertrude Stein of the Netherlands, that you had somehow transformed, you had transformed your home and your life into really a salon in which you not only produced very interesting plays, cutting edge, but you really hosted some of the most fascinating people I'd ever met. So we can start with that and perhaps move backwards. How did that come to be, the happy booker?
To become the happy booker. Well, I've been going to the Edinburgh Theatre Festival for many, many, many years, ever since I got deported from your lovely country, the States. I didn't get away with sex, obviously, there. And so I was into talking, you know, it's another famous four-letter word that ends in K. Wouldn't say anything else. So apart from the first one that I got rich with, I like talks in both languages, English and Dutch. And the first play I saw that I really liked was a Polish play, Russian, based on a Russian writer. And it was about a one-man show with one bulb, one lamp, and one stool. So I didn't have a stage yet or nothing. And it was about his trip from Moscow to Petushki. It's called Moscow Petushki. And the guy gets very drunk. Anyway, long story short, he goes back and forth, doesn't know if he's coming or going. Like some men don't either in real life. And when I asked him, I saw him in Edinburgh, can you come to Holland and do the play? He says, yes. Can I do it in Polish too? I said, yes, of course. Because we had a large group of Polish Jewish intellectuals. I had friends in that circle. So he got very drunk in the basement first, rehearsing, and he was excellent. And from that on, I have done terrific plays. And kind of stopped out.
And you know, it's very interesting. I don't know if you know this, but when I came to perform my show, which was somewhat poignant and somber, all of your animals in your house were in heat. And I was in the middle of a monologue on the Nazis, and suddenly the cat climbed on stage and started going, "Aah!" And I somehow thought that was perfect. But you also, what fascinated me was the people that you found. I mean, first of all, your slaves served the meal after my show. And then it was followed by a really amazing conversation. I don't know, you had a knack for drawing and finding some of the most fascinating people and indeed intellectuals.
And oddballs too, oddballs as well. Yeah.
Yes, oddballs indeed. I remember every night meeting a collection of genius PhDs and some of the strangest oddballs I'd ever met, but it was absolutely delightful. But I was also impressed with your ability to sell your shows. As anyone who's ever produced a play knows, the selling of the show is more, in some ways, more important than the show itself, because without an audience. And I wondered if you had honed your skills early on as a madam in New York, the selling of things.
Well, here I could stand at the corner of the street in Holland with my flyers, but that you couldn't do as a hooker or prostitute in New York. So in New York, it was a girl, what I thought a perfect secretary, in a singles bar at the Rockefeller Plaza. I was working as a secretary for the Dutch consul, but it paid very meagerly. And she was sitting, and she could see me flirt with everybody. I was horny, you know. So I would go to bed with somebody for a glass of orange juice. And she said to me at one point, pointing at my crotch, "Honey, do you know you're sitting on a gold mine? What you give away for a glass of orange juice, you could make a lot of money with that." And I had no idea. Because my mother always said, you should get married as a virgin, otherwise your husband will call you a whore. And that was very, very many years ago. And okay, I didn't marry as a virgin, but nobody called me a whore. But so from that moment on, I quickly got into the prostitution business. But the most wonderful thing was the phone number I had bought from a sort of separating madam who was finished with her career. And that number was Murray Hill 8 2468, which I added to the number to call when you want to get laid. So nobody had to write it down, so the wives would find it out. So there's no business, no erection and demolition service visiting cards.
And you bought the black book of a retiring madam. Is that how it started?
Carolyn Meadows, yeah. And that, how I got to Robin Moore, who wrote the book with me, or at least he was taping me without me knowing it, is that I had called him. And it was his brother's name who had obviously been on his woman's list. And he happened to pick up the phone. And I was also a hooker who could read, obviously, because I called him. I said, "Hey, Arthur Moore?" He says, "No, I'm Robin Moore." I said, "Well, I really should talk to your brother because I have a new picture exhibition." I didn't say I'm having a call girl business. And he said, "You know who I am?" I said, "Yeah, you're the one who wrote the French Connection and the Green Beret." So he said, a painter who reads. He still didn't know I was a hooker in the business. So when he showed up, we made it, he still had no idea, but he was bugged and he didn't take his coat off. He only paid $50. But for an hour, I sat and told him all the stories. And he did this every 2-3 weeks until I finally realized, hey, this is not a very, this, what's he doing? You know, I never gets laid here. And then I happened to have my lawyer, Paul Sherman, he's dead now, who was a client, and he was just getting dressed. I said, "Throw away the KY jelly, come and talk to me and Robin Moore, and let's frisk him, because I don't trust him." And so we frisked him, and he had his whole, it was taped, bugged. And then we signed our original contract in there. And he called the book The Happy Hooker. I said, "Oh no, I'd rather call it Come and Go." But also that would be suitable. But The Happy Hooker.
Did you have any idea it would be such a runaway success? I mean, was it a total shock to you?
It was an illegal profession. And I thought I'd bring it better than Robin Moore saying, "Hey, this is my book, The Happy Hooker." So I said, let me discuss this. And I got onto so many shows, which I still see films from now. Larry King. Name me a few, anybody from those days.
Hard Talk, yeah.
Yeah. And then when I got Hard Talk, yeah. And that was nice, Hard Talk. but I spoke, I was the first one who was allowed legally on print to use 4-letter words instead of three-letter words. So, like, I don't know how far I can go in your program.
Well, we can use our imagination, but I wanted to just ask you. You know, you You were a madam in the late 60s, and your book came out in the early 70s, and it really seemed to coincide with this sort of second wave of women's lib, Gloria Steinem, Erica Jong. And I wondered if that had something to do also with the spirit of the times, why suddenly there was a more permissive or more curious.
Yeah, I joined, I was invited as guest of honor at the ICOP, International Congress of Prostitutes, where Norma Jean Almodovar, who I met in LA, had launched this whole organization of prostitutes worldwide. And she had written a book about the corrupt police force, and she was a prostitute as well as a policewoman. And we didn't have computers, and they raided the place, stole her manuscript, which she had, thank God, a copy of. And she actually launched me. Then I met people like Annie Sprinkle, who is now also in her late 60s. And she's biggish, but she's still doing great things, you know. And Veronica Vera became one of my best friends. She has a school for boys who want to be girls, for transvestites. And Candida Royale, she's dead of cancer, but she started the sex toys, which is a very big industry now. The artificial penises and so, instead of the backside of your toothbrush, your electric toothbrush, which I used for many years. So anyway, but we didn't have this Me Too business, which is poisoning everybody in Holland now. Even if the men are not guilty, they get accused of something that happened 40 years ago.
Well, so, I think you're bringing up an interesting point to me, who I'm about 15, 12 years younger than you, but already there's a shift in that. I think what you're implying is you didn't necessarily feel victimized or taken advantage of.
No.
And do you feel that, how do you think your mindset was different?
Zsa Gabor, who's dead now, had married 7 times wealthy people, very wealthy men. And if that isn't the kind of hooking, I don't know, because she ended up alone with a palace and a much younger husband. So that wasn't called Me Too affair. She just sucked those people dry financially. I don't know what she did with the rest, of course. But there were lots of movie stars, Milan de Monjo, Brigitte Bardot. They all started, Claudia Cardinale, they all started off as prostitutes, and they all basically started with the directors of the films. And some of them, not Einstein, but somebody with Stein in it, he got caught many years later.
But so, I mean, what you're saying is they use the system and they use their bodies to secure power. But is that a good thing? I mean, now.
It's clever. I'd say it's clever, because they got where they wanted to come, of course. But now you can't even look at a young girl. We now have what we call a Dutch very famous singer, Marco Borsato, handsome man in his 60s, who's worked for 30 years with a woman as his assistant in his career. He had a wife and kids and all that. He was known to be a flirt. But now suddenly, after all those years, this woman's daughter, she got fired because his job ended. And now she found the diary of her daughter when she was 15, where she says, Marco has inaugurated me, you know, he's had sex with me. And now they make a massive, massive case about it. Well, if I was a girl of 15, and then you're not so childish, and such a handsome man, 20, would inaugurate me, I would say, hallelujah, thank you, you know, for teaching me. Because sometimes those girls are provoking it also, but now the poor guy is ruined. So that's the Me Too affair, which I don't like. Well, Epstein, what's the name, the one who supposedly hanged himself, I still think they killed him. Now Ghislaine is going to get massive pimping fines, I'm sure. But she found all those girls and told them that you're going to get $250 or $300. You have to do this and that. And now they're all starting lawsuits as if they were tortured. You know, they weren't even tortured. They just had sex. But I'm not into the sex anymore now. No. I love the other famous four-letter word called talk, which ends in K.
Yes, but you're definitely very unabashedly, unpolitically correct, and I would expect nothing less from you. But I want to switch. I want to switch to your early days, because most people, they only think about you when they think about the multiple books you've written, including your column for Penthouse, as a sex author. But actually, I think one of your most profound books was called Child No More, about the death of your mother. And I'd love to hear how that was inspired and maybe how it affected you as a person.
Well, it affected me so much that if Oprah Winfrey at that time hadn't stopped interviewing people, she was known to do excellent interviews with women who had written a book about their parents, or usually mother-daughter. But I would have made a million in America, but I was already away from the States. So the book sort of sold reasonable in Europe, in French, in German, in Dutch, in Russian. And but I think it's one of the nicest books, the most emotional books I wrote. And also because my mother had been in a lesbian relationship for 20 years of her life after my father died. I was in a lesbian relationship. And when we were together at her deathbed, the nurse said, when she had closed her eyes, "This is the most harmonious ceremony I've seen." And that's the way I felt about it. But my background is really Indonesia. And this is where a psychiatrist, who of course had to see after the Japanese internment, said there are two kinds of people coming out of the war. Either they're the survivors, like I am, or they're the oy vey. I lost my family. So I became a survivor, and actually a solo performer. And I never really needed somebody to support me. I'm very happy now. I'm married to the most beautiful man in the world. Who looks after me?
Let me go back and just give a little context. You were not born in the Netherlands. You were actually born Xaviera de Vries and in Indonesia, correct?
Yeah.
And explain how it is you got there and how you ended up spending the first three of your lives in a Japanese internment camp.
Well, my father was half Jewish, half Indonesian, Dutch, a mixture, Jewish, Indonesian. He was a doctor in Holland, and he immigrated to Java with his whole family, brothers and sisters. So they were there for years, living in Surabaya, Malang, whatever. And he had married a Russian ballet dancer with whom he has a daughter, which is my half-sister, who's now 90 and just going dement a little bit. But she has a very smooth skin still, lives in South Africa. So then he came back to Holland. He had divorced his first wife and met my mother, who was a top fashion model, tall and slender. I wish I could say I'm the same. And my father was a very witty, charming man. Wasn't that faithful to my mother. She had a lot of trouble with that. And that's also in the book where she catches him in the act. So this little anecdote. Okay, back in Holland, we had a secretary, an old spinster. She was adoring my father. And she said at one point around Christmas time to my mother, "How nice your husband." In those days, you could still get fur coats. "He gave you two fur coats for Christmas." And she says, "What, two? I only know of one, this whatever, some seal coat or so." "And no, there's a black mink coat too." She says, "No, I don't." In those days, you're still allowed to wear fur coats. And she says, "Well, this is a black mink coat, 7,000 guilders or whatever." So my mother got clever and started looking for patients coming in wearing that coat. And I'd heard this was going to happen. So I was upstairs in my bedroom. I was very good at listening in the bedroom to the fights downstairs. And then somehow the doorbell rang, and in came what I call the mustard maid. She was a simple but whorish, lovely Dutch woman whose husband had night shifts. And oops, here goes my scarf. So, and she had obviously been wearing this coat. So what all I heard is that, but screaming row after 5 minutes, my mother walked in with a cup of coffee, caught my father in flagrante delicto with this woman, anyway, performing oral sex on him, let's put it that way, in his white coat. And my mother grabbed her, but her coat was fallen. She picked up the coat and threw her out of the house. So that night, she was screaming hell, "I'm going to divorce you, blah, blah, blah." So I went downstairs. And I said, "Why did you let her go with the coat? I would have taken the effing coat." So that's how you can panic, can end up with sort of a fun situation. But we were in the Japanese camps, my mother and me, and my father separate. he was a camp doctor for 200 women each camp. He's been tortured and never spoke about it. I heard about his tortures from other male inhabitants.
Because he was Jewish? Because he was Jewish?
Yeah, very few people know this. In fact, now I get from Germany social money as a war victim, because the Germans had indoctrinated the Japanese. Those Jews, they should get treated worse. So we had Bangsa Yehudi, Jewish folk, on certain camps where a lot of German Jewish doctors from Amsterdam were there. They were living in Indonesia. So they're paying me nicely every month to reimburse for what the Japanese did.
Yeah, it is a story we don't hear much about. And do you think that the early years in the camps affected the rest of your life? And do you have memories of it? Or?
Well, yes and no. As I said, I've been under psychiatric treatment because I couldn't cry for a long time. You know, I was just sort of... It was all too bad. And he said, either you grow out as a powerful woman or you be a nebbish for the rest of your life. You're, oh, it's me. I'm the victim. I had no direct family members died in Auschwitz or Sobibor, but 6 or 8 of my cousins did. I never heard the story, so that was a quick death also. So, of course, we watched Schindler's List and other things, but about Israel and I mean, the whole world is going to pieces right now. You can't really say who is doing what, but Hitler was a nasty, nasty man, and he did horrible things. Mm. But I grew out of it, you know. I don't feel like a victim anymore.
Right.
But I've always had the penchant for Jewish men for some reason.
Yes, and you always produced many, many plays with Jewish themes, which fascinated
me. Yeah, Westerbork Serenade was a very famous one. And I still have friends who I know from those days, who became my visitors and friends. Yeah. And I don't go out much. We have this whole COVID affair going on worldwide. And then the anti-vaxxers, oh my God, and the demonstrations. I'm in Holland, as you know, right, in Amsterdam. But I'm so glad I was young when I was healthy and the whole world was kind of healthy instead of sick, sick, sicker. Yeah. And I've lived in Spain also many years, in Marbella. Well,
And you're working on a new book now, aren't you, about all the secrets that you hear in you now run a bed and breakfast. I should mention you're in your 1200th invention called the isn't it the Happy Sleeper now, your bed and breakfast?
Yeah, I've actually finished last week 2 books. I call it Wall Talk, If Only the Walls Could Talk. One, which is called The Bird of Paradise, and that's from my days in Spain and et cetera, my travels and all my adventures. And then book 2 got so full, is called Xavier's Happy House. And there are some odd characters who were guests here or friends or orgies. There's everything from SM fetishism to I did all the kinky things and my lesbian side, my bisexual side, polyamorous, they call it now. I was never much into polyamorous relationship with my lovers, but I'd go alone to orgies, you know, and putting your key in a bowl and switching with your neighbor or whatever. I wasn't that good at it. I picked my own victims, but I'm now very happily married for 16 years to a very faithful man. And you met him, right? And,
I met him when you met him. Yeah. And does monogamy suit you these days?
Yeah, very much so. Well, I've had some bisexual affairs with women, but he allowed it, you know, he tolerated it, but I never would move somebody in. And the girl that I know for many years is called Dia Huizinga. She is a Dutch poetess, and she's a swimmer. She's totally into the gay scene. But she's all out also with the LBGG, whatever, they've got this long name, this rainbow thing. And she trains gay men how to swim, you know, how to do matches and so. I'm not into that. But I know a few very nice women. And sometimes I see somebody on television, oh God, she's my type. But that's it, you know, we don't do any more hanky-panky.
You mentioned to me that where your priorities lie now are on really sustaining long-term friendships. I'd love to hear your thoughts.
I miss you so much also.
I mean, it's crazy times. I can't wait to be there again. But tell me about, you know, as you reflect, you know, some of the things you want to really kind of focus on in your life now.
Well, staying healthy is, or relatively healthy. I used to fall a lot. I don't know. I wasn't just a fallen woman. I used to fall a lot. And then it turned out I had to get both meniscus knees fixed in Spain. And at the same time, the same doctor who did that gave me every year a very nice injection to soothe some of the pain in my leg or in my back or my shoulder. And only once. It was quite expensive. I never knew what it was until I had more pain and I got a shot here and a shot there and a shot there. And then I got really ill. And then I found out he'd been pumping me full with cortisone, which you can't do. It really, I got osteoporosis or arthritis. But it's a lot less and painful. It's just that I don't walk a lot anymore. But I've got a husband who's a great career, and he drives me everywhere. And I don't really want to go out anymore. I have the best view from my house in Amsterdam out of the window. And while writing those books in Dutch and in English, it's very time consuming. Now I have a massive computer crash. So I've got my second computer out for you now. But basically, I think when I finish World Talk 2, and it comes, I have a meeting with the publisher, a Dutch publisher in January, then I've been there, told it, said it all, and done it all. And not that I want to die, but I do see around me, especially women over 70 dying slowly, and men over 60, heart attacks, prostate cancer, hernias. They're suckers. They die much sooner than we do. So my friends are thinning out a little bit.
So you basically, you can kind of rest easy and then just celebrate the friendships you have.
Yeah. And we have some lovely, lovely guests permanently. They're really? Renting rooms here, which I'm allowed to do. It's my own house. And one of them is an Italian girl who's just coming in February, in January. And she's allergic for all kinds of things, but she works for a Japanese restaurant, which you still does delivery. You're not allowed to go to it. And she's allergic for tomatoes, isn't it? But she's funny and she's hilarious. And then we have a tall German guy who's studying mechanical things at home. And we have a lovely other couple that met here, and they're now going to move up to the attic. So they have all kinds of, it's a beautiful big house in Amsterdam South. There's always one room for guests. So if you know anybody coming to the Happy House.
Well, you'll probably get a lot of guests after this interview, but listen.
Well, I hope so.
Among everything else, you're the best storyteller in the world. And I can't thank you enough for taking after the you. Time. Let me just... Now, oh, how beautiful. Oh. It's my Christmas bed. Oh, that's beautiful.
That's loads of fun.
Well, Merry Christmas to you. And I know it went by so quickly, but I look forward to seeing you in person.
And I really love to your parents. I still know them too. I had a great day. And I hope to see you in Holland soon, okay?
Absolutely. Thank Stay you healthy. So much. All the
Philip
best.
Philip sends his love too.
Thank you too.
Now you tell me what to do. Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.